sent our way. And now stay tuned for today's episode of Disability Beat.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with returning guest Anthony Saldano, documentary filmmaker, improviser, and theater producer. But first, disability news for the week of October 20th, 2025. Amid a wave of autism-related announcements, the Trump administration is investing $50 million in research that experts say is a welcome step. The National Institutes of Health has approved 13 projects under its Autism Data Science Initiative to explore factors behind rising autism diagnoses, including environmental contaminants, perinatal complications, maternal nutrition, and aging in adults with autism. Alicia Halliday of the Autism Science Foundation said, quote, "The projects chosen for funding are excellent and will provide answers about environmental exposures and their interaction with genetics," end quote. The funding comes as the administration makes autism a centerpiece of its health agenda, even as President Donald Trump and Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have promoted unproven links between autism and Tylenol use or vaccines. According to Helen Tager Flusberg of Boston University, quote, "The contrast between the exciting science and the simplistic pseudoscience views expressed by the president and secretary could not be more striking," end quote. NIH said that the ADSI projects will merge large data sets, including the SPARK project, Medicaid claims, and the National Survey of Children's Health, while inviting autistic individuals and caregivers to the research. Despite the investment, autism research funding has dropped 26% this year, prompting advocates like Andy Shee of Autism Speaks to call for full funding of programs authorized under the Autism Cares Act. According to a new study, children with autism are much more likely to experience ongoing stomach and digestive problems than their peers, with issues often connected to sleep, behavior, and anxiety challenges. A UC Davis Mind Institute study tracked nearly 500 children, about two-thirds with autism diagnoses and one-third without, from ages 2 to 12, using detailed gastrointestinal interviews. Nearly half of children with autism had GI symptoms at some point, and 30% experienced them throughout childhood, compared to over 60% of typically developing children who had none. Lead researcher Dr. Bilbana Restrepo said the findings confirm what many parents already know. Quote, "GI symptoms are very common in children with autism," end quote. She urged clinicians to ask about these issues regularly, since treatment can improve comfort and well-being. The study also found that children with frequent GI problems have higher rates of sleep disturbance, irritability, sensory sensitivities, and repetitive behaviors. Said senior author Dr. Christine Norda, quote, "This is a reminder that the brain and body are deeply connected," end quote. The researchers hope their findings encourage closer collaboration between pediatricians, gastroenterologists, and autism specialists to improve overall quality of life. Duquesne University has received a $12 million gift from the Edith L. Trees Charitable Fund Trust to launch the Institute for Disability Empowerment and Advocacy, IDEA, aimed at expanding opportunities and wellness for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Over the next 5 years, the Pittsburgh-based Catholic University will develop IDEA under the Provost's office, with programs in workforce development, assistive technology, advocacy, and culture. Trustee Larry Blair said he believes IDEA will be the first institute of its kind in the nation with an immediate impact on Western Pennsylvania's disability community. The institute will collaborate with the university's medical, health sciences, education, liberal arts, business, and law schools. Founded in 1956 after the death of Edith L. Treese, the charitable trust focuses exclusively on supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Treese and her husband, Joe C. Treese, created the trust in honor of their son, who had significant disabilities. And finally, a new report on Wallet Hub ranks the best and worst U.S. cities for people with disabilities based on factors like healthcare, community services, and accessibility. The study compared 182 cities using 33 indicators across three categories, including economy, quality of life, and healthcare, and also including affordability, employment, physical accessibility, and Medicaid effectiveness. Minneapolis tops that list, followed by St. Louis, Scottsdale, Arizona, Columbus, Ohio, and St. Paul, Minnesota. Minneapolis scored especially high for affordable, quality medical care and wheelchair accessibility. At the bottom of the list, Juneau, Alaska, South Burlington, Vermont, Gulfport, and Jackson, Mississippi. And that's the news for this week. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm joined today, happy to have back again, returning guest Anthony Saldano, who is has many roles in his life as a young man. He's a documentary filmmaker, has done several of those, improviser, and a theater producer. Welcome to the program, Anthony.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's so great to be back on your show.
It's great to have you back. I know you're a busy guy, so I know it was tough making time for this, but I appreciate your efforts. So for those people who don't know who you are yet, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. I'm Anthony from Queens, New York. I'm a documentary filmmaker, really passionate about doing documentaries of people with disabilities in my community. And I have always been creative and found some passion through friendships. And as you mentioned, I do dabble in improv. It's just a really fun way to creatively express myself while working on film.
Yeah. Well, I think you're one of those people who probably dabbles in a lot of different things. It's just kind of an exploratory spirit anyway. But we were thrilled. My husband and I were thrilled to come up to Chicago when you were in Illinois to reveal or have a first showing of your most recent film, Hopscotch with My Brain. How's that been received lately? I mean, it's such a riveting film, just unbelievable, I think.
Oh, thank you. First of all, when I showed it to had a private screening with you guys, and I had the pleasure to be sitting next to you guys, you and your husband Mark. Mm-hmm. It was very nerve-wracking as not only the producer but the editor of the film. To, you know, you prepare the film, and I was just so happy with how the screening went, and It was just, it really was a very special evening, and really just confirmed everything that we've been preparing for so long. As we're speaking about this, you know, this film that we're about to talk about, my business partner and very good friend Jason Figuera and I have been working on this for well over a decade. So to answer your question, really, I've been making some adjustments to my perspective of Jason's story, like my point of view, because it's just a great story of our 20-year friendship.
Yeah, well, for those people who aren't familiar with it, can you kind of summarize the story a little bit and give people a taste of what they might see when they see your film?
Absolutely. Hopscotch with My Brain is about a young filmmaker that chronicles his journey with severe obsessive compulsive disorder. And in just a matter of weeks, Jason Figuera went from an award-winning producer to hitting rock bottom, and it was all captured on home video by his father. From my perspective, I was his best friend on this journey. And when he told me that he had OCD, I was like, I did not understand how devastating this was to his life. And as he started to reveal more to me and confide more in me, I realized that this was, I agreed with him that this was a story that we had to tell. And also, just as a side note, Jason and I have been traveling, we've been traveling buddies since 2010. So this is now 2025. So we have 15 years worth of Jason and I traveling all over the country, just hanging out. So really, it's not only a personal story about a man in his mid-20s who finds out that he has OCD and how he basically has to live with this mental illness with his parents, but also it's really a story about, like I said, our friendship over the last 20 years.
Yeah. So you've been friends with Jason for 20 years. At what point during that 20 years did you know that he had obsessive compulsive disorder?
So I met him when I was a sophomore in college, and it was his first semester. Mm-hmm. So that was around 2004, and he basically was diagnosed about 8 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So it was he was diagnosed in probably around fall of 2012.
I think many people think of obsessive compulsive disorder as just somebody who washes their hands a lot, maybe, or flips light switches on and off. What made Jason's symptoms so significant for him and his family?
I agree with you. I had that same perception of OCD as well. Basically, in the summer of 2012, he was experiencing a lot of pressures in his life. He was about to graduate from grad school, and just the pressure of not having a full-time job and owing a lot of being in debt, as well as that stress, plus the fact that his aunt, Yvonne, someone who was very close with throughout his life, passed away.
Mm.
And basically, he always had rituals as a child, but having such stress and plus the loss of his aunt, he basically started having intrusive thoughts that if he didn't do something a certain way, that he would pass away. So he had these different intrusive thoughts of death, and it started to take over his life.
Yeah, the film that you that showed that he that his father took of him was just riveting. I mean, just frightening. But you said that you used 30 seconds of film, but the actual event that happened took much longer than that.
Correct.
So
yeah, there was I had the as an editor, I had the unfortunate responsibility of looking at the original footage of my dear friend having a mental breakdown. And it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to see like a half an hour of someone that you're close with experiencing the worst moment of his life.
Yeah.
And eventually I just decided that we should make this like a car crash and have it be one minute instead of longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly was impactful. And how is Jason doing today? What was the result of this breakdown where he struggled so badly?
Jason, he eventually did go to therapy,
mm-hmm.
Where he unfortunately had to pay out of pocket. And he also started taking medication, and his family and his community were really involved in helping him get back to his somewhat normal self.
That's awesome. And is he continuing to work with you, doing other films? Is he, gone on to other things?
We haven't talked about the other films yet. We're still talking about how we can make this film as amazing and just
You're still working on it?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
We're still brainstorming this project, basically.
Yeah. So are you possibly going to enter this in film festivals? Are you looking for showings around? Who is your key audience for this film? Not that everybody shouldn't see it, but do you have certain groups in mind that would enjoy it more than others possibly or benefit from it?
We definitely would. Specifically to film festivals that focus on disabilities, I would love to have this documentary shown to schools as well as inpatient, different medical associations and nonprofit organizations, and it would be great resource for patients as well as families, people who suffer from OCD. It's definitely an educational tool, and that we're looking to have future discussions with different nonprofits throughout the country.
Right. Well, this is not your only film related to disability issues either. I think the first time you were on the show, you had produced a documentary called, let's see if I get this right, Straight Off the Canvas.
That's right. That's correct.
So tell the folks about that one too, because there aren't many filmmakers out there, Anthony, who focus so much on disability issues. It's really kind of a treat to watch some of the work that you've done, and this particular one was also very good. So summarize that for.
Sure, absolutely. Straight Off the Canvas is basically like a dream project of mine where I got to interview a blind artist and really capture some of her. She was born blind, had surgery and regained some of her vision, but she's still legally blind. And she's just so talented of an artist. And we also went to a local blind school here in New York City and just showed an art class at the Lavelle School for the Blind and artwork progressed to the point where they had an art show. So it's just it was like a dream project, and Elizabeth Castellano was so gracious to tell her story and, you know, basically show that people with disabilities can be artists. They don't have, even if you have a disability, you're not limited to just being a teacher for people with disabilities. You could teach people with sight. So it definitely, there are possibilities in what someone can do for a living, even if they have a disability.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me how you have gravitated toward this type of story. What brought you to that point in your life? I mean, many filmmakers want to do blockbusters. You're more, introspective, I think.
I think the first answer to that question was, you know, when you're out of college and you have to set yourself apart from other people, you want to use your skills that you just learned in college to help people. And you try to think, well, how can I help people? And I started to read a book, and basically I was just curious about how blind people perceive art. And that kind of set me on a journey of different documentaries about blind people in New York City, because I realized right away that before I could tell a story about blind artists, I should get to know the blind people in my community and what do they need. Mm-hmm. And that's when I basically did my first documentary, We're Ordinary People, which was aired here locally on public access television probably about 14 years ago. And then to answer two of your questions at the same time, when I said earlier that I was kind of retelling my perspective of Jason's story, one part of the film that I really didn't delve into was when Jason had his episode with OCD. Like, Jason had helped me through numerous injuries prior. I had broken my arm when I had done my first documentary. Jason was there for me when I broke my arm. I had a couple of surgeries, and Jason was right there, and also had a back injury that I still deal with to this day. So while Jason was dealing with OCD, I had some physical issues too. But we were always there for each other. And, I'm really excited for people to see it. And just going back to, again, being next to you and your husband, it just confirmed that the film is powerful.
Yeah, it really is. I was very impressed with it. So can people see this anywhere? Right now, I mean, is it online somewhere? Is it pay-per-view somewhere? Is, you know, how does it work?
Well, we're working on that. Not exactly just online yet, but we do have our social media content that we're building. Mm. And I definitely have an email that if anyone would like to more information about a future, because we would love future screenings. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what is your email that people can contact you?
Sure. It's hopscotchwithmybrain@gmail.com.
That's an easy one. hopscotchwithmybrain@gmail.com. And do you have a website as well?
Yes. And it links to our social media right now as we're developing our website. So it's hopscotchbrain.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also hopscotchwmbrain.com.
Okay, so lots of places to go to find out information. Yes. Now, all this hopscotching you're doing with this film, is there anything that you have thought about for a future project at all? Or are you going into comedy improv right now?
Oh, well, I mean, I'll always be doing comedy improv on the side, but there's, you know, I'm always thinking about new projects for the future. I'm dabbling with an idea of, you know, just like inspired by you and your show. Maybe I should, you know, maybe I could do like a TV show or a podcast in the future, just where I can open up and tell just more stories about, not just people in my community, but, all over the world. Because, one great thing was I convinced Jason to get on a plane and go to England and interview someone with OCD in London.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to be able to tell more stories, not just in New York City, but throughout the country and the world. So maybe it'll start as a podcast and turn into a TV show. I'm excited about that idea.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. I mean, there are so many stories out there that people just don't hear unless they're in disability world. And that, it makes a big difference. I mean, people who listen to this program have called me up or emailed me and said, you know, I never knew that there were so many concerns, you know, so many issues surrounding people with disabilities. But, you know, your show has made a difference in the way I perceive that. So I think your films certainly are going to do a big, you know, are going to make a big impact on lots and lots of people in that regard.
I appreciate that.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to talk about before we're done? Because we only have a couple more minutes.
Let's see. I have to say, like, there were some comedic parts of the film, and I to watch you guys laugh at that point, but then come back. It's a film that is not just has its drama and it has its feel good moments, but also has some moments that'll make you smile. And I feel like I took you on a journey, Vicky, because I saw you laughing and crying at the same time.
I know. I remember it well. And it you know, you can't have a serious film like that without having some light moments. I mean, it just helps to relieve the tension a little bit. But you did such a masterful job with it. It was really impressive. And I was glad to meet both you and Jason and some of the folks that are, you know, a part of your circle. It was really a fun time. So I appreciate your work. I hope that we have you on again at some point with whatever your next project is. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Anthony Saldana, a filmmaker, documentary filmmaker, and comedian too. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
Support for WEFT programming is made possible, in part, by the Champaign Park District. Box Lunch is back. On select Fridays, talented local artists will fill the historic Springer Cultural Center with a wide variety of music, presented by WEFT. For more information, champagneparks.org.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Stay